This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, and thank you for being here today. Another candidate interview. We're talking with Democratic candidate for governor Patrick Starnes in studio today. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Kyle. Thanks for having me.
So talk a little bit about your background.
Well, I grew up outside of Roseburg in a village, as people know, of Looking Glass, which is the end of the Coos Bay Wagon Road. And my dad worked at the mill in Dillard, Roseburg Forest Products. And then I was a cabinet maker for 30 years. And recently, since like 2014, my wife and I have been restoring old abandoned homes. The first project was up by Junction City, actually in Junction City. It was in 1906. And now we're in Brownsville. We live in Brownsville. We just finished a project. It was from 1878.
So how long do those take?
Well, yeah, it's not flipping because it takes longer than 6 months because they were both abandoned for over 6 years with big mossy roofs and broken windows.
So a lot to do, but something that you probably are happy to show off when you're done.
Yeah, it's really rewarding, and it is a huge woodworking project.
And so you kind of go from getting one done and then finding another one that works within what you want to do.
Yeah, we travel around. We're a half hour north of Eugene, so we try to find abandoned homes within a half hour from Eugene or Corvallis and Albany. We're in the area. And we've found over 100, Kyle, that are across that area. And then now when I'm traveling to all 36 counties during the governor's race, I can't help but keep finding more that I see even in eastern Oregon, you know.
So during your time here, you were involved somewhat politically. Talk about some of the things you did.
Yeah, my wife and I, along with 100 volunteers, we were the ones that gathered the signatures, over 2,000 signatures in 2006 to make the county a nonpartisan race, because a lot of us felt that the three commissioners, it's not like they have a caucus, you know, so it's sort of like a school boards are nonpartisan and city councils are nonpartisan. And just with three commissioners, they should be nonpartisan. And what was surprising was that it was very successful with like 68% of the vote. So it was a very bipartisan support.
And then you were also involved with some offices here in the county.
Yeah, I was elected several times to the Douglas ESD. So after that, I moved to the McKenzie River and was elected to the school board up there, a very small school district, and also have been elected several times to the Douglas Soil and Water Board. So I feel like I have on the ground elected experience. And I feel that anyone that goes to Salem should be required to have served on a school board, even the governor.
What about now? What are you doing in the Brownsville area?
Well, I'm on a board. It's called a nonprofit board called the Kalapuya Food Alliance, where we host the community garden and we also host the farm market, which my wife and I have a plot in the community garden and we have a booth at the farm market. And that's really rewarding. Besides sheltering people, Kyle, feeding people is the second best, or they're equal, I would say. Rewarding to shelter people and also feed them.
Talk about your kind of, I would call it maybe evolution politically. You've kind of not always stayed in one place in terms of how you're registered.
Yeah, in the 90s, I was the secretary of the Douglas County Democrats. When Kitzhaber was first elected governor, I was there at the Umpqua Brewery. You may remember the Umpqua Brewery. He had his victory party, and I was there. But then when Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton passed NAFTA, I left the Democrats because I was really disappointed with all the jobs that we lost and all the environmental effects of NAFTA, along with the damage to our neighbor in Mexico, which has caused a mass immigration to the U.S. But after January 6th, and after Biden signed within the first 24 hours the end of the XL pipeline, I felt like maybe the Democrats were going to start working for the people again. And so I was interested in doing that because I've always been a populist and tried to work on kitchen table issues. Even when I ran for county commissioner here in Douglas County in 2008, I talked about how we could get a lot of wood products from doing a lot of the thinning on the national forest and the BLM. And
so you ran for governor before. That time as an independent, though.
Yeah, so in 2018, I've been a non-affiliated voter, the short is NAVs, they call them, for 20 years since NAFTA. But then in 2018, I joined the IPO, the Independent Party of Oregon, and they had a vacancy for me to run as governor, and we focused our campaign around campaign finance reform. And then at the very last 2 weeks, I endorsed Governor Brown because I got her to realize that we needed to amend the Constitution. Because Oregon has tried several times to set contribution limits, but they always got thrown out of the court because they were considered unconstitutional. But by amending the Constitution, which we all did in 2020 with Measure 107, and it was out of the ballpark, the success of that. It was almost 80%, 78% of the Oregonians across the state voted for Measure 107, which finally amended our Constitution, which allowed us to have contribution limits. And even Douglas County had that same 68% for Measure 107 to amend the Constitution. The lowest was in Lake County, which I've been last month I was there in Lake County, with 60%. And any candidate would love to have 60% or more. So across the state, it was very popular, bipartisan, to amend the Constitution.
This year's race is interesting. The last check, I think we were at 33 people running for governor. A few more Republicans than Democrats. So you got one independent candidate that's well known. What led to this field being so crowded?
Well, it's the first time in a long time that it's completely open. You know, Kate Brown is term limited out, so she'll finish her her term next January. And so a lot of us that have been elected to different kinds of offices, and I'm one of the only ones that's run for governor besides Bud Pierce. So, you know, he's on the Republican side. So the two of us have that kind of experience. Of course, the state treasurer, Tobias Reed, has been elected several times to statewide office. So we're in that top tier of people with that kind of experience.
And what kinds of things do you think you bring to the table that would help you be a good governor?
Well, besides my practical blue-collar working experience as a rural Democrat, I'm bringing up the issue of campaign finance reform again, since the speaker and the leaders in Salem failed in 2021 to set contribution limits, which I was really disappointed. And then again, here in the short session, they just tabled that effort. Sadly, Shamia Fagan, the Secretary of State, has blocked our effort to get it on the ballot, so it would be on the ballot this November. Hopefully, the Supreme Court will reverse that verdict, and we'll have a ballot measure that will finally set contribution limits.
Along with campaign finance reform, what are some of the other top issues for you?
Well, I feel like there are many issues like that that are common to both parties, and they're common to rural people and urban people. Issues like wildfire, that's starting to affect not just us rural folks out in the country, but it's affecting even the big cities. So that's a common ground issue. Rising health care costs, no matter who you are, you're struggling with that. And the unhoused situation, the homeless situation. When I travel all over the state, it's not just a Portland issue. You know, you have it here. They had it down in Curry County when I was down there. And they even have it in eastern Oregon along Interstate 84. So those are the kind of issues that I think will bring Oregonians back together. So it'd be a little less divisiveness. Because if we have these bipartisan successes together, I think that's going to really bring Oregonians together. Like when I was a kid, I always felt like it was one Oregon. And I would like to get us back to that.
And we've talked before about that rural-urban divide. Most of the state's population and voters are in the urban area, and that's focused on a very small amount of the land in the state. What advantage do you think you have being from a rural area?
Well, because I'm sympathetic, and I have also had years of experience working with diverse opinions, conservative opinions, not only on my school board experience, but also on the Douglas Soil and Water. I'm working with farmers and ranchers. And then I served on the Watershed Council, which is trying to restore the salmon and the Umpqua system, both the North and South Umpqua. And you're working with timber companies, and you're working with farmers and ranchers there. So I've been elbow to elbow, side by side with those interests more than any of my opponents in the Democratic Party, especially the top two. I consider myself in the top three now that we've traveled the whole state.
Going to take a break on Inside Douglas County. More when we come back. Patrick Starnes, Democratic candidate for governor. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com. 1246 at News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson coming at 1. Shannon Sebastian has your cue, part of KQEN Local Talk, this afternoon at 4 on tomorrow's Inside Douglas County. We'll look at Umpqua Valley Arts. Emily Brandt, the executive director of UVA, along with outreach director Sarah Holborough, they'll be in. Also, our next candidate interview Monday, another Democratic candidate for governor, former House Speaker Tina Kotek. Patrick Starnes in with us now, running for governor. And what about Oregon in terms of whether or not it's a business-friendly state?
Well, I think we are. I think that, you know, the fact that we don't have a sales tax makes it good for my business buying wood products, you know, from Jerry's or Home Depot and stuff like that. So imagine if you're doing a big construction project, if you had that 9% sales tax, that's pretty discouraging. I don't make over, you know, five figures, so I don't have a huge income tax. My wife and I file together, so I think it's pretty good. I mean, we have really good land use laws that a lot of people disagree with, but that also keeps us from having the sprawl from all the way up I-5, you know, from Roseburg to Eugene to Portland. All that great farmland would be sprawl if we were like some states, with no protections for our farms and our forests. And I think that's very important. And it's also what makes us so beautiful and so attractive. And that's one of the issues, Kyle, that causes the housing crisis in Oregon. We have every year, 10%, we have 40,000 people coming to Oregon every year from the Rust Belt or from California. So imagine the whole city of Roseburg moving here every year, so that creates that scarcity of housing, and so the next governor really needs to deal with that.
Some industry has come into different parts. You've got the big Google facilities and things like that over in Central Oregon. A lot of growth there. Growth here has been slower, and even recently we've seen some companies that are remaining in Oregon, but as they expand, like Intel, they are doing it in other states. Is that a concern?
Yeah, of course, any loss of industry is a concern. But I would argue that we could be leaders in these green jobs that you're seeing. You know, you mentioned Eastern Oregon. When I'm traveling through Lake County, those solar farms or ranches, whatever you want to call them, are really powerful there in the desert. And also, when you're on the gorge, you see the wind energy. And when I was at the coast, I was touring the South Coast. They're talking about the wave energy or the windmills that are off the coast. But bringing it back to wood products, which is a strong issue for me, we have to do something about all the raw logs being shipped to Asia. And as governor, I would fight to have an excise tax. Because I was just in Coos Bay, and I saw those big shiploads of raw logs. And when I see those, since my dad was a mill worker, I see jobs being shipped away. And so we need to not only do that, but we also, as a wood worker, finished cabinet maker, I think there's more we could do as finished wood products, you know, value-added wood products. Because you go to Home Depot or Lowe's and buy cabinets, but they're not made in Oregon. You know, we make all the wood products for those cabinets, ship those far away, and then they come back. But we could do more. And that's what I feel like the governor's office could connect the dots better, put these people together, you know, the manufacturers. And when you travel across the state, there's all these old abandoned mill sites because things have been consolidated by the big corporations that run the timber industry now. And so these abandoned mill sites are great opportunities for manufacturing. And those manufacturing jobs are really good paying jobs because they have train infrastructure or they have the high power line infrastructure, and they've already been designated as an industrial site. So I'd like to see us do even more finished wood products with our forest products, because 2x4s and plywood are great, but wouldn't it be great to be manufacturing furniture and cabinets and even the mini homes that we need for the homeless.
What about the governor's role in the management of state lands and also advocating for the federal government in terms of what you would want to see the federal government doing on land they own in Oregon?
Yeah, having grown up here and worked side by side with the timber industry on the Watershed Council and being had worked with Umpqua Watersheds, I feel like I have a deeper understanding of those issues than a metro candidate, you know, from the Portland area. So I can advocate for the rational, common sense harvest on both the BLM and forest, and I did that during the 2008 county commissioner race, and I could continue to do that. And same with our state forest. And the big thing that's changed, Kyle, since even when I was running for office down here, is that the science has discovered that those big, huge old-growth trees, especially like in the Elliott State Forest, those are the ones that are storing more carbon. And you know, we always grew up thinking that it was the young forest, but now the science is proving that the bigger the better. And so we've got a new value for our old growth forest that we didn't have even, you know, 20 years ago. So and I think I've always believed that I could be a conservationist and a woodworker. And so I believe strongly that we can have a balance. And that's, as governor, I would advocate for that kind of a balance.
As you've been around the state, what kind of response are you seeing to your campaign?
Well, it's been difficult because the Portland media is sort of shutting me out because I haven't raised millions of dollars. But we are the only candidate who's not taking corporate money or PAC money, and we've limited our donations at $1,000 because I felt like we had to role model the campaign finance reform that people want, that with the 78% of us that wanted that. And so we're, every time I talk to a different county party, you know, like in Lake County or in Union County, I get donations from those folks because they realize that we want people-powered elections, not special interest-powered elections or corporate interest elections. So, and that's a bipartisan issue. When I went to Salem in 2019 to get the legislature to refer that Measure 107 to the voters, I met with almost all 90 members, both on the House and Senate side, including Gary Leaf and Dallas Hurd, who supported that referral to the voters. And they, I think they continue, or Dallas does, Gary Leaf, rest in peace, support campaign finance reform. And I think that's the kind of bipartisanship that we can rebuild that's really lacking, not just in Oregon, but across the country.
About a minute left on Inside Douglas County. Final thoughts, what would you tell people that are evaluating your candidacy?
Well, that I'm one of the only Democrats, if you're a Democrat listening, one of the only Democrats that's traveling all 36 counties. I'm not just staying in the metro area where my opponents are. And I'm the only one that's leading by example on campaign finance reform. And when you go to my webpage, starns2022.com, you'll see I'm the only one that has a platform and with concrete solutions for the housing situation, for healthcare, and for wildfires is something I hoped we would talk about. And maybe I can chat about it just here in the last few seconds. There was a new bill in 2021, Senate Bill 762, which puts boots on the ground to help us deal with wildfire. It's called the Oregon Conservation Corps. And older folks may remember the Civilian Conservation Corps from the Depression. So it's the same kind of idea, but now we'll have workers in each of the rural communities from the state to help us battle wildfire, which is another common bipartisan issue.
Patrick Starnes, candidate for governor, thanks for being in this afternoon.
Thanks, Kyle. I look forward to coming back.
1257 News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.